Good evening and welcome to The Gnostic Waves, your weekly fix of all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. My name's Diana Azam, the weekly host of this show. So tonight's program is on the topic of the runes, and I've invited a guest speaker to talk on this topic. And the motivation for this particular talk was actually one of the listeners, Louise Morgan, so shout out to Louise, for putting in a request for a topic on the runes. And so I've invited the Gnostic missionary, Glenn Kaywood, who runs the centre in southwestern Sydney, so the Gnostic Association there, with his wife Anya. And he is going to talk to us on the topic of the runes. So, hello, Glenn.
Hello, Diana.
And thank you for agreeing to come on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So I think the last time you were on the show, you gave a talk called Tasting the Heart of the Dragon based on the Nordic tradition. So yeah, it's quite interesting that you'll be talking on the runes tonight, which shares a similar lineage to that tradition. So I leave the audience in your hands. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Diana. And once again, thank you for the opportunity to, just share the knowledge that has been shared with all of us, everyone that loves Gnosis, everyone that's made those sacrifices for so many to be able to have the knowledge, all the Gnostic instructors, the masters, and of course, thank you to Master Samael for his great sacrifice and making all of this knowledge available to us. So tonight we're talking about the runes. Hopefully we'll cover the runes in a way that makes sense to someone who may not have a lot of knowledge about the runes, the way we work with them in Gnosis, and about what the runes are. Because a lot of people have a general idea of runes as being something that can be used to cast, like an oracle, where people may cast rune stones or pull rune stones out of a bag or use them in some manner in this way to use as a type of divination. So we can use the runes like that, but that's not their primary use, we could say. So using them like that, we could compare it to any of the other oracles, the way they're used, like the I Ching or the Tarot. The Tarot, if you are familiar with it, most people will know there's many pictures within the Tarot cards, which is like a pictorial book which clearly shows us the mysteries of the path of creation, of self-realization. And those symbols that we see in all of these types of, let's say, divinatory oracles are something we could call an archetype. So an archetype is something that everyone can relate to. An archetype transcends all of our barriers or our differences, our perceived differences, we could say, because it touches us all at the essence. So this is an important thing to realize, that everybody has an essence and we are all essentially the same in that essence, because we can become, let's say, confused or disoriented because of our gender or our culture, religion, political affiliation, all of these things coming from different points of view, and they can stop us seeing that true nature is essentially the same with all of us. So with the runes, we talk of something in Gnosis as the yoga of the runes. So yoga is a very important word because it means to yoke or to join or to unite, the same meaning we could say as the word religion, but it's let's say been the meaning of that word yoga for a lot of people will just be like a physical aspect or a physical posture that people may go and practice in a physical way. But there is an understanding that these things have a deeper side to them, something much bigger, much grander, that there is a spiritual aspect behind these things. Yet the focus of yoga still primarily may be on a physical aspect. So when we say the yoga of the runes, what does rune mean? The word rune relates with a symbol with mysterious or magic significance. So rune means a secret or a mystery. So this is something inherent within every rune. Just as we mentioned, the pictures on the tarot cards have a mystery within those as well. So those mysterious things are all around us. When we look at the marvelous stained glass windows of the large cathedrals, within those we have sacred geometry. And if someone decodes them for us, we find mathematical formula and principles relating with the ratios between the planets and the stars, showing us this direct relationship with the creation of the universe. But if we don't know how to decode that, all we look up and see is a beautiful colored window. And then we miss that inherent mystery that is right there in front of us. So within a rune, there's a tremendous book of wisdom, but one would have to know how to read the book, the same way we would have to know how to read any religious text or any religious book. They're all containing a mystery that really is something only to be understood with training. If we interpret the holy books, the esoteric texts, literally, then we get many, many things wrong. And then, of course, we have people saying, you know, religion is bad because of the interpretation that people take of certain teachings. So to understand the mysteries, to understand these holy texts that we all take for granted, like the Bible, we need to be initiated into those mysteries. Someone needs to be dedicating themselves to those mysteries and not using that knowledge for their own purpose. So in the yoga of the runes, there's a mystery of how to unite. Then we get to another question, which is to unite with what? The thing we want to unite with is our divine nature, to unite with our spirit. And again, this is another difficult thing to describe, because it's something which is not physical. It's a vibration of energy which is much higher than our physical body. It exists in us. It permeates through us. It's a particular type of electronic energy of the spirit. And working with this energy is a work with waking up the consciousness. So if we want to talk about waking up the consciousness, we have to understand what an asleep consciousness is. And it's easy to see how the consciousness is put to sleep with all of the problems that normal life presents us, all of the problems of materialism, relationships, families, paying bills, going to work, taking care of pets, all of these things. The consciousness becomes fascinated by all of that, and then it becomes difficult for the spirit to be able to shine through in this life that's dedicated to all of this type of materialism. We rarely give the spirit an opportunity to come forward because we're kept so busy. So as we said, the spirit is a very high frequency in comparison to the energy of the physical body. And we have to realize that we are more than just physical matter. We have an existence on many different levels of energy and different dimensions. So we have a physical body, a physical energy, and these other energies beyond this first energy, most people will be able to understand because they're very easy to understand. We all have our own experiences of them. Beyond the physical, we have the vital or etheric nature, which gives us the life force. Beyond that, we have an emotional energy. So everyone has their own experiences with emotions. This is connected with psychic faculties. Beyond that, we have a mental energy connected with the mind and with the thoughts. Beyond that, we have a causal energy, which is the energy of our will. Beyond that is an energy of the consciousness. And even above this, we have an energy of the spirit. So we're made up of all these different energies. We can use these different energies, engage them. We can become trapped in certain aspects of them, only engaging with the emotional energy or only engaging with the intellectual energy. And this can come at the expense of the physical body. So we can be very intellectual, happy to indulge many intellectual concepts, but we may have something else that wants to happen in the emotions or something else that the physical body wants to do. So all of these energies need to be put into order. They need to be aligned to be able to reach these higher energies of the spirit. Most people will have an experience of what it's like to have these energies not aligned when we want to be somewhere, but at the same time we feel like we should go somewhere else. So in other words, we have the mind wanting one thing, the heart wanting another, and the body wanting to do something else again. So these energies aren't aligned. So there is an energy of the spirit that needs to be activated, needs to be awoken. And this is an important process to understand, that this is the work that we do, working with the runes. We receive the runes from a very ancient tradition as a way to explain this work with the spirit. So they were given to the humanity in order to educate us. So the origin of the runes is from another dimension. Just as we would describe the origin of all life, all existence, as coming from another dimension. When we go to sleep at night, we exist in another dimension, but we know we are still alive. When we wake up in the morning, we may have a memory of a dream, but we quite easily discount it as though it was something not real. Yet in that moment, we were existing in another dimension. So there are non-physical aspects to reality before reality becomes physical. To reach the physical dimension, it's a condensation that occurs. So when we look at the human race, when we study the origins of humanity, we try to discover how we came about through only studying physical means. And we can never find the answer because our origin is non-physical. So we have many theories and many ideas because the current science cannot see beyond the physical dimension. And we have a lot of theories, but no matter how many theories we come up with, we still don't even know why we are here. But many theories say we developed the way we are because we started eating meat or cooking our food, using fire, for example. So the reality is that there have been many existences of human life forms on the planet, that they exist through races, and then that life is nearly completely wiped out and a new race begins. Life continues. So we know that this has happened several times through different major civilizations on this planet already. That happens in accordance with the different processes of the planetary cycles. And what continues on is an oral tradition, or things that can survive through earthquakes and floods and fires, where we have stone carvings, runes carved in stone, pyramids, Mayan, Incan, Aztec, Egyptian, many great stone structures and monoliths that survive. And then these stories turn into mythology. They become legend. These stories find their way into holy books. And then they are interpreted by a particular belief or religion or culture. So after millennia, it's easy to lose the thread of knowledge or the true meaning of knowledge, how it was originally given. So when we talk of civilizations that have existed before, like Atlantis, for example, people think we should be able to find it. But we have to realize there's many amazing things still being found on the planet that have been there for so long and yet we never knew about them. If we look at science news, we see many amazing things about the planet, about space, about the human body. So the civilization that left us the runes was the first race that existed on the planet. They were conscious beings. They had the divinity within them. And they were connected to other divine beings, other divine sources that were able to give them this knowledge directly. When we read stories of ancient legends, they were always talking with the gods, the goddesses, angels, devas. We see it in the history of the Romans, the Greeks, the Hindus, Tibetan, Egyptian. And this wisdom is the foundation of language, the foundation of all forms of pictorial communication. Many of those that still exist today, like the Chinese characters. But we have to recognize that when we look at a pictorial image, let's say like one of the symbols of the runes, while it may look very simple, if we try to interpret it in a literal way, that is one way to understand it. But there's a greater depth of knowledge behind that than just the literal understanding. As we begin to know something, the way most of us can, let's say, speak English, for example, it's easy to forget how much we are interpreting or understanding beyond what is just heard or read. It's not until you encounter another culture that you realize there's a deeper meaning in many things, like the words we use. I remember speaking with some people one time, I think they were from the UK, and they told us when they first came to Australia that if someone said to them, "See you later," it meant, "I'm coming around tomorrow." Simple sentence, simple words with a completely different meaning from one country to another. Yet it's the same language. And there they were waiting for these people to come around that never came. Or some other people that could speak English very well, but when they came to Australia, someone would say to them, "How are you going?" And they would say, "Maybe we're going by taxi," because they had no understanding of the phrase that was being spoken to them. So simple words, English that everyone can understand, yet completely different meanings or a deeper level, we could say. It's a silly example, but you see how different we can understand things, how differently just from one culture to another. When we want to understand the runes, we aren't using the memory in this kind of way to know them. So the runes originally were like this pictorial language. And then we have hieroglyphs, Egyptian hieroglyphics. And generally we relate the runes as coming from Thule or the Nordic Island, because this is where the first race existed on the planet. And then, of course, we have many beautiful mysteries from all of that tradition. But at the same time, the runes are older than that as well, because they represent something that's universal. They're not really associated with something in time. So the tradition of the runes, or the runes themselves, they transcend cultures. And contained within the runes is the beginnings of how to understand the universe, what we call science, art, philosophy, religion or mysticism is all inherent within the runes. We can really take a lot for granted now because the average person can read, write, know numbers, mathematics. But a lot of these things were one time considered to be a sacred wisdom, which you could only learn if you were deemed fit to learn them. So you had to have a certain level of being, we could say, in order to be able to study these things. So maths, for example, is an ancient science that belonged to a mystery school and was never taught publicly. So the average person might be able to exchange money but have no understanding of the complexity of geometry and mathematics and linking it to the cosmos. So all of this wisdom is contained within the runes, and each of the runes has some piece, some connection within it of how to activate the spirit. So there are practices we can do with each of the runes, using physical postures of the body, mantra, prayer, meditation, pranayama, working with the breath. So we'll try to touch on the importance of some of these aspects. So when we see the runes being practiced, if we know how the practices go, for example, if we've had some contact with a Gnostic center or the practices that we do within Gnosis, or if you're hearing this for the first time, please try to make contact if you're interested with a Gnostic center so you can discover these, because we really need to be taught these by a teacher. It's difficult to relate all of this information without being face-to-face. So they're not just physical postures. These shapes of the runes ended up becoming our letters. So, for example, the rune Is that looks like the letter I is now the letter I in our language, but contains more than just that letter I or that sound that's created by that rune. So when we look at our language or we look at a letter, we forget how difficult it is if we can't put those things together in a way that makes sense to us. And it's really great if we can have an experience where we go somewhere that's completely alien to us to see. Recently, we were in China and we were in places where we had no idea what anything was, and just trying to order a meal, we could say, was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for us, but not so much for the people trying to understand us. So we very quickly realize that there's letters all around us, there's communication happening, people freely speaking with each other, yet when we don't understand, we're almost completely helpless. So we take it for granted how wonderful it is to have letters and words and to be able to read and understand these things. It's important because these runes, being the foundation for words and the verb, why is the verb so important? Because within the word or the verb is the creative force. The word has creative power. We can create with the word. We can destroy with the word. All of creation occurs through the word. It's a magnificent sound that unfolds. The cosmologists will describe still being able to listen to the sound of creation. If you tune a radio into the static, they say that this is still the sound of creation happening. And you can get a sense of this when you look at the study of somatics, how sound or vibration can be made visible. So the runes and their link with the word and the sound and vibration. And then from all of this, we move to music as well.
Thank you, Glenn. This might be a good opportunity to take a music break then. And I've chosen the track from the CD Best of Sibelius. It's track number 7, titled Four Legends from the Kalevala. So we'll be back to continue on the topic of the runes with Glenn Kaywood on the Gnostic Waves show. So you're back. That was a track from the CD Best of Sibelius. And Glenn Kaywood is here on the show talking to us on the topic of the runes. So thank you, Glenn.
Okay, so we were talking about the sound before the music break. The sound, the Tibetans and Buddhists often say this sound is om. It's murmuring of this sound, the undulating M, the background noise of creation. And there's many traditions that explain this, that the angels sang everything into creation, divine beings or God spoke the world into creation. We see it in the stories of Narnia. The lion Aslan sings the creation into being. All of these different things displaying this understanding of the creative force of sound. So the verb and the word are important, and these form the foundation of the words that we use. And you can see the way we use words and sound is very different to how the other animals use sounds. And we do it both in good and bad ways. So we have a tremendous power with the word that we have to respect. But we don't see any other creature on the planet using words the way we use them as a humanity. So to use the runes, to use the word wisely, is a way of learning how to recapture that wisdom of the verb. In the Hindu tradition, they called it the science of pranava, also known as mantra or mantralization. So the word can be mantralized, which has a particular vibration. The vibration emits a force. We can see in the work of the Japanese scientist Dr. Emoto, freezing water after exposing it to different sounds, the amazing geometric forms that would appear according to the sound, either being deformed or perfectly formed crystals. And there's also machines that can manifest the expression of sound if you put sound into a tonoscope, showing the geometric shape of the sound, what it looks like, the vibration it produces. So where there's shape, there is geometry. Every sound has a geometry to it. So this is why sound can create. It's something very powerful. So we have a mantra that goes with each of the runic practices as well. The vowels that we use in our language, A, E, I, O, U, are very important vowels or sounds for our mantras. Esoterically, we also consider the sound of M and S to be vowels as well. So for us, we consider to have 7 vowels or 7 important sounds that we use within the mantralization. So language is an important study, something that can be very expressive, or something which can be very minimalistic. Words in English, for example, are limited compared to other languages. So if you try to translate a poem or something from French or Spanish or one of these other languages, it's very difficult. You lose everything because there's no words sometimes to describe these other things in other languages to change it to the English language. And if we start to minimize our language, we also lose the power and the potency of our language. So we abbreviate everything. We say, hi, I'm the CEO and I want the ETA ASAP. And most people listening to me would understand what I mean, but we reduce all our communication to the most vital acronyms to corrupt the capacity of communication. And texting is like this as well, using emoticons. You know, if we say something like lol or roffle, these are things that are creeping into everyday speech because they're used in text messages. That's great, lol. Or something my daughter showed me, which was quite funny, some text messages that someone had sent. So most people know that LOL is an acronym for laugh out loud or laughs out loud. And someone had sent a message to someone that said, your aunt has just died, LOL. And the person's replied back and said, Mum, why is that funny? And I said, I thought LOL meant lots of love. So she sent this message that says something that says laugh out loud because of a miscommunication. And she said, I've sent this to the whole family. Now I have to go back and, you know, apologize and resend the messages. So we have all of this language that's degenerating. Now imagine when a divine being comes and tries to explain to the humanity principles that are related with the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, or seventh dimension. And we no longer have the capacity to understand these things. People communicate less and less face-to-face, living in the internet, in a virtual reality, spending less and less time IRL. That one was in real life. So mantra and sound is very important. The other thing, of course, is that we take a posture. So our posture is related with our movement, with our motor cylinder. And the spoken word is also related with this motor cylinder as well. The way we use our body today sometimes can be very harsh on the body. We can do a lot of damage to the physical structure. So the vehicle is maybe losing its capacity to be a good vehicle for the consciousness to be able to express. So the original purpose of most of the yogic postures were to keep the body supple, to keep the spine supple, so that when a very important event happened in the life of the one who's trying to awaken the consciousness, trying to work with these energies within us, energies of the spirit, energies of the divine mother, that this force that a lot of people would have heard of, known as the Kundalini energy, was able to awaken within the spine. So different traditions have different names for it. It's connected with prana, with chi, that with the correct preparation, one day this energy is able to ascend through that pathway of the hidden occult anatomy within us, and then changes us physiologically, internally, psychologically. So the posture of the runes is a way of bringing back harmony to our motor cylinder, bringing harmony to the organism where it may have been damaged over time. Prayer is another important aspect within the practice. We can have a lot of very strong concepts about prayer, but it's a very powerful way of using the verb or the word to communicate with that electronic or spiritual dimension that exists within us. Prayer is something very profound. And a lot of people may only use prayer when they are in a moment of desperation, when they feel like they're about to die, for example, feeling horribly depressed. But we don't have to wait for these types of moments to pray. So the prayer is something that we can use to help us raise our consciousness out of the situation that it's in, out of that heaviness. So when people come to a knowledge like Gnosis or any esoteric knowledge, they quite often looking for something to do with the spirit, something to do with divinity, something to do with the purpose of being alive. And prayer can connect us with these things. But one of the most important things that prayer does, when one starts to truly pray from their heart, is that their vibration begins to change. And the vibration of the body can begin to lift out from that heavy, heavy materialism. So to lift out of all of those things we mentioned before, all of the concerns of life, those things that can dominate our body, dominate our mind with preoccupations and worries keep us vibrating at a low level, because that vibration will attract certain things to us. And if we raise our vibration, then we will attract different things to us. So we begin to move out of that realm by changing our way of being, forgetting the problems, forgetting the preoccupations, beginning to connect with something which is more eternal, more profound, something beyond just this life. So we connect with something different when the vibration is raised. We attract different things. We perceive differently. Everything begins to change when a person deeply, deeply prays. So posture, prayer, the breathing, or the pranayama, working with the breath. We extract the prana from the air, the vital aspect or the pranic aspect. So this begins to change our whole body. The health changes, but more importantly, the consciousness begins to change and we begin to acquire a force. So we have a mantra, a posture, the prayer, the pranayama or the breathing. All of these are interconnected when we do a rune. So all of these things, we want to have them coincide together. We could also include meditation with the runes as well. So what the runes do is connect us with a force, because within us we are like a mini universe, really, with systems and systems of nerves and blood vessels and lymph and all sorts of things happening in order for the body to function. So when we work with the runes, we work with energies of the universe. These exist as electromagnetic fields. And we don't have to go too deep esoterically to understand these magnetic fields. The earth has them, the cosmos has them, the sun has them radiating. You can watch documentaries talking about the solar wind or the radiation and the atmosphere of the earth protecting us from the harsh aspects. But certain rays pass through, they come to the planet, and we also receive certain forces from other planets as well. From the moon, from Jupiter, Mercury, Saturn. There are universities that actually have machines that demonstrate cosmic particles which are hitting the planet. These cosmic particles are bombarding us nonstop. If you want to see an example of this, you can look for some videos on YouTube of people when they make something called a cloud chamber. A very simple device that can be made at home in order for you to be able to actually see these cosmic particles for yourself. So we have within us like a little electrical factory, like a small electrical cosmos which is being bombarded by all of these radiations, these particles. And when we don't know how to receive these forces, they create like short circuits within us. With all the scientific knowledge we have available, we feel like we can know a lot about our planet, yet we're discovering new things all the time. For example, it's interesting to know that there's approximately 60 tons of space dust falls to Earth every single day. Every day we're receiving 60 tons to the planet from space. This material goes towards forming clouds and even fertilizing plankton in Antarctica. We know how important that is for all of life on Earth. So we're much more connected to the universe beyond our planet than we might think. So the moon affects us. That's why we talk of people going crazy with the moon, with lunacy. Venus affects us with the forces of love. But when they're not received correctly, that force can turn into a very lustful type of energy. Or the force of Mars sends force. When that's not received correctly, it translates into war, violence, and anger. So when we don't receive the energies correctly, because the human instrument's not receiving them correctly, we create problems. So doing the runes, we can begin to change the way the organism is receiving energies. Because we wonder why we are so out of harmony with the universe. there are many people working with these different types of energies. You see, for example, people finding ley lines or divining or dowsing. It's very interesting if you look up dowsing, how many people will say there's no scientific evidence for it. It can't be proven. And yet still you can see waterboard workers, when they go to dig for water, they still use dowsing. So while it might not be able to be proved scientifically, the practical aspect of it is that it's being used and it works. So when we look at our planet, we can do a lot of harm to the planet. Mining, digging, nuclear blasts, mining dense materials that should remain underground. Then we have all of that in our psychology, and our body is like this as well. People doing things to their body now with plastic surgery or the move to have different types of implants within the body. There's a big movement in Sweden, for example, where thousands of people are getting implants within their body, microchips where they can control all sorts of things like opening their front door, paying for their train tickets, security information to let them in when they get to work. So this is not a science fiction. This is a movement that's happening now. So we affect the planet. It's reflected in our body as well. So all of these things are, let's say, moving us away from the normal functioning of the body and all of the energies that should be moving harmoniously through us. So just to quickly touch on some different aspects of the individual runes, we see our letters originated from these. So the rune Fa, maybe you can look up what these runes look like while you're listening or later. It becomes the base for our current letter F. Isis is the basis for the letter I. R becomes the letter A. Sig becomes the letter S. T becomes the letter T, Dagas the letter X. So these all became our letters for our language and our words, and the words are not random. If you study the meanings of words or the origin of words, they're always very interesting. They're not just random things strung together the way people try to make up words now. So these runes and these different energies link with, as we said, the forces of creation, the forces of the Divine Mother, the Mula Prakriti, forces of the Christ, the forces of the consciousness, the forces of the will. If we want to learn about these, I would encourage you to find a Gnostic center, because we could say many, many things about each of the runes, talking about them. But then we can also do ourselves a disservice if we explain too much, because what's important beyond all of the intellectual knowledge is the experience of the rune itself. To stand in the morning before the sun, to feel yourself as a part of the planet and connected with the universe, to hold your palms up to the sun, to feel that energy entering through the chakras of the palms, and enjoying the energies that the planet receives, using them in a conscious way. When I do the rune Fa, for example, at home, each time I do that rune, almost immediately the sensation is like the room has become smaller. It's something difficult to describe, but it's like nothing has changed, but something also has changed, like an expansion of a consciousness, because that rune Fa has this beautiful prayer that directly relates with the awakening of the consciousness. So the experience of the runes is something important, not so much the intellectual knowledge, because it's that experience which will lead us to an understanding which we can't come to from reading or listening to anything. And this is the goal of the Gnostic centers, to awaken the consciousness, to bring people to that knowledge, to be able to know for themselves. Okay, so I think we'll finish the talk here. And I hope we've given something to give an understanding of the runes and how we understand them in Gnosis.
Great. Thank you again, Glenn, for coming on the show, the runes, and put on the website a picture or an image of the runes so people can have a look.
Yes, that'd be great. I would have liked to have done a practice, but it would have been a bit difficult, I think.
Yes, well, anyone who's done the runes before knows that we really need that visual to be able to follow along for the positions. Okay, so thanks again for coming on the show.